Welcome to Alumni Evolution, the official podcast of the Kentucky Wesleyan College Alumni Association. Join us each week as we interview incredible alumni and friends and follow the evolution of their lives.
Hey, everybody. We are back again for another edition of Alumni Evolution, the official podcast of KWC Alumni. We are talking to Captain Corey Gant.
Actually, it's Battalion Chief.
Battalion Chief, yeah. That's right. We just had a promotion.
That's right, yep.
That's right. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Corey and I have the privilege of serving on the alumni board together, and he has quite the illustrious career, I think, with the Owensboro Fire Department. So you were at Wesleyan when?
Graduated in 08, so from 04 to 08.
Yep. 04 to 08, so you were traditional four-year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I mean, you know, a lot of kids nowadays want to take that four-and-a-half, five-, six-year plan.
Yeah, you know, you always wonder if you could go back, and it's funny, my senior year I had three professors. Both Dr. Flashcombs and Dr. Connor pulled me in the room during my general chemistry class and tried to get me to change my major. And, you know, at the time, it was my spring semester, my senior year. I'm about to graduate in a couple of months.
Not
and I'm
a good
like,
time to
well,
change.
The thing was, I had a year left. I could have played football another year because I redshirted. So it's like, man, if I could have gone back in time, I probably would have changed my majors and stuck around for that fifth year and seen where that ended up. But anyway, I wouldn't change it.
So what did you major in?
So my major was sports and fitness management. I had a minor in business administration.
Okay. And you played football?
I did, yes.
What position?
So I played tight end.
Okay. So, tight end. Did you play that in high school also?
I did, yes. I played in high school, and I only got to do it one year when I was in Little League because I was overweight all the time. So, because you had those weight limits in youth football. So, one year I was able to touch the football.
Okay. But in college, you played 3 years?
Well, yeah. I mean, I was on the team all 4 years.
Yeah. Okay, so did you catch many passes?
I would say I was more of a blocking tight end. I don't know, Roy Pickerel's threatened to erase my stats. I don't know how many times since I graduated, so I don't know what my stats are anymore.
Oh, heavens. I mean, you know, does anybody really pay any attention to Roy, though? You know, no, I'm just kidding. So, 2008, you graduated, and that took you where?
So my initial game plan was I applied for graduate school at U of L. I was trying to get in their sports administration program. I was going to go back home and go to school.
So Louisville's home.
Louisville's home. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I didn't get in. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I know now that I wish I'd known then when it comes to that. Like, I sent them an email back after I get in just saying, can I get some feedback? And, you know, they gave me, well, the average people had this GRE score and this GPA, and they had 1 year of experience. And I'm like, well, that's not on the application process that you need experience. I didn't know that I needed experience. I had actually
the hidden criteria.
Yes, I had actually been doing an internship in the athletic office within athletic director Mr. Gallup for about the past for at least a semester, if not two semesters, my senior year. But I didn't put that on a resume when I did my master's degree application because I didn't know. So had I known that, it would have been on that application. Maybe that would have helped. I don't know.
But that would have been experience.
That would, yeah. That would have been experience. And, you know, I think internships was the one big thing that we didn't talk about a whole lot back then. If I'd known that then, I probably would have picked up a summer internship doing something. I, you know, I spent one summer living in Naples, Marco Island area with another guy here that went to school with us, who's my best friend, was best man at my wedding. But, you know, maybe that semester I would have looked for an internship down there. I didn't know that. So either way, I didn't get into U of L, and it was the only school that I applied to. I guess I just assumed that I would get in. So when I didn't get in, I was still working here full time as a supervisor at the Best Buy store, and it was right in the middle of the recession. So
that's right, 2008.
Yep. So
not a great time to be
in the job market.
That's right.
So I had a full time job, and I was like, well, I'll stick it out here. And I was renting a house with three other guys, and I was like, well, I'll just stick it out here for now and kind of find my way, I guess.
And that kind of took you to the fire department?
That not necessarily that. When I got back together with my wife, her brother was a firefighter.
Oh, okay.
And you know, we'd been talking about it, and at the time I was also working at the YMCA part time, and there were several of them came in there that I knew, so I just got to kind of talking to those guys, and I was like, heck, I'll just throw my name in the hat and go from there.
And it just like the police department, the fire department's always looking for good people.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, especially right now, the fire service, and not to get off topic, but the fire service in general nationwide is struggling in recruitment and retention. And you know, a lot of people are too. But our numbers down nationwide are tremendous. I've talked to some colleagues at like the Memphis Fire Department, Lexington Fire Department, and even Louisville. You know, they're bringing in people all the time, but they can't keep anybody for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah.
Or they're just not able to hire. You know, we struggle here right now hiring. We have a crew of about 100 on our fire department, and we're down 10 people at the moment.
Yeah, and it's just very difficult because it's such a worthy profession. You know, we need him. You know, just like police.
Oh yeah,
we need him,
mm-hmm.
And it's difficult to get anybody to do that kind of work.
Well,
it's tough work.
And it is tough work, but there's a multitude of issues in regards to why we're having the issues that we're having nationwide. If it's funding, lack of pay, and not to get on a hot topic, but the state of Kentucky in general with what's happened to the pension system statewide has really caused issues across the board for not just the fire, but police and public work in general.
Yeah. So you were at the Best Buy and at the – did you say you were also at the Y?
I was working part-time at the YMCA as well.
Part-time at the Y.
So when I applied for the job at the fire department, I had actually left Best Buy. I actually got hired as the fitness director at the YMCA, so I was kind of put in my sports
working
and fitness.
Working in your field.
Yeah, working in my field. It was a full-time job, you know, not a very high-paying job, working for a nonprofit that, you know, that's based off membership revenue. So I did that until I got hired on in the fire department in September of 2010.
September of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So you've been with them since then?
Yes.
Continuous?
Yes.
And talk about that just a little bit. You hire on as what, and how do you progress? I mean, you've taken several steps.
So when you come into the fire service in the state of Kentucky, one thing that you have to go through is you do like a basic training. It's roughly 400 hours, so 10 weeks, 40-hour weeks. And that's kind of like your basic before you go ride a fire truck or go fight a fire. It's doing – you're fighting fire. You're pulling hoses. You're doing – you're cutting up cars. You're doing rope rescues. You're doing different things of that magnitude. And then after you get that 400 hours in, then you get assigned to your crew and your apparatus, and then you go from there. You go to your shift. So we work a 24-on, 48-hour shift. So every third day, you're spending at the fire service.
Okay.
And then on top of that, you know, you're going to get, you know, I went to EMT school while I was in my basic training, basically, during my 400 hours. You got to get your EMT certification. And then there's just, you know, as you progress through your career, there's a multitude of other certifications and so on that you can go and achieve to just kind of better yourself and kind of grow.
So talk about those for you. What are those certifications? What has happened in your career?
So there's a accreditation company, the International Fire Service. It's called IFSAC is what the abbreviation is. You know, the basic stuff is they call it firefighter 1 and 2. That's kind of solidifying you as, hey, you can do what the basic fire department stuff. Then you get into different fire officer classes, which there's officer 4 is the max, which I have achieved that. I've gone outside the state, gone through Alabama. Alabama has an actual dedicated fire college that I've taken classes on through them. I'm a level 2 instructor for the state and nationally. I'm a 1403 instructor, which 1403 is a NFPA standard for us to conduct live burns, where we actually go to a house that's abandoned and we'll basically burn the house and we train
as a training opportunity.
Yep.
Okay.
We're in the process right now of building a new, you know, $5 to $7 million facility on our training grounds. And now in my current role, my job is those training grounds, and we're building a 4-story building that I can light fires on all four floors if I need to, or whatever I want to do.
You know, that's to the layperson, that sounds kind of cool.
Oh yeah. I mean, it definitely has, it's fun. And that's the opportunity to learn, but it's also the fun part of the job as well, because we get to go in and fight fire. You know, if we go out and fight a fire on a day during the day, it's usually somebody's worst day.
It absolutely is.
You know, we are there. We are a very expensive insurance policy, for lack of a better word. But guys want to fight fire. This is the way for us to do it without causing the bad side of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and you learn something along the way.
Correct. Yeah. So, you know, you got all those different certifications and there's other things that you can do that you can get involved in. We currently have a 30-man special operations team that I head up. We have mutual aid agreements with Davis County, pretty much all of Western Kentucky, some counties in Southern Indiana. I'm actually working right now with the state of Kentucky passed House Bill 147 last year. We actually developed our own USAR team. So they had these FEMA USAR teams nationally. There's 28 teams. We'll be a state team. We won't be a FEMA team, but the state of Kentucky is going to fund a USAR team that'll be able to respond to incidents within the state. So we go back to like the tornado from 2 years ago or the floods right in Eastern Kentucky. Those would be things that this team would be called out to respond to statewide, instead of having to wait on Indiana Task Force 1 or Tennessee Task Force 1 to get here to help us, we'll have these in-state team that can go deploy to these incidents.
So you have to talk about that just a little bit, Corey, because, you know, I think about, okay, we just talked about fighting a fire. Now you're talking about more emergency rescue and disaster rescue and operations. What's that look like?
So just to back up a second, you know, we always say we're called firefighters, but in real aspect, it's fire rescue or whatever you want to refer to it as, because we do a multitude of things. And, you know, we do vehicle rescues, we do rope rescues, confined spaces, you know, some of
water rescue,
yeah, anything of that magnitude. But you know what, when your pipes are freezing at 2 o'clock in the morning, guess who gets called out to come shut your water off? The fire department.
Okay.
Because you can't get a plumber there. You call, not somebody calls, and then somebody doesn't know how to shut their water off at their house during when you get these cold streaks like we've gotten in the last few weeks here in Owensboro. I don't know how many times I've shut water off at houses because they have pipes burst. You get the little things and you get the really big things.
And I think that's what is fascinating to me, that people don't think about all of those aspects.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's, oh, let's sit around and wait until the tones go off and then we go and fight the fire.
Yes.
That's
not always what it is, you know, and we're not just fighting fire. We're doing anything and everything. You know, the police handle the law and criminal side of it, and we pretty much do everything else. But going back to the rescue side of it, we do so much on a local level and on a state level. Our team, we had guys on our team deploy down to Mayfield during the candle factory during the tornado, and our guys were crawling through the rubble of the candle factory trying to find survivors. We went to Bowling Green the 2 or 3 days following to help them do search patterns in the neighborhoods that had been hit down there. Two summers ago, we got called from mutual aid from the Henderson Fire Department. They had two guys down in a confined space that they could not get, that we had to go down, and it was filled with H2S, which is like sewer gas, and full of water. So we had to deploy our team over there and do a confined space. Well, it was a recovery at that point by the time we got there. But, you know, we do trench rescue. I've gone where guys have digging trenches in roads for plumbers and so on. They have a trench collapse on them, pulling guys out of those situations. So we do a multitude of different things in the fire service than just fight fire.
And you also mentioned that you are an EMT.
That is correct, yes.
And so that's a whole different aspect, the medical aspect.
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, and I've seen it all. I've delivered a baby, and I've seen people, unfortunately, take their lives. It's you see a little bit of everything in the fire service, EMS service, and it's funny. I was in a meeting this afternoon, and we were talking about just health and wellness and related to the fire service and firefighters, and something comes up as the mental side of it and mental health for first responders. You see a lot, and it's not necessarily the one or two things that get you, but it's that compound effect of constantly seeing the things that usually are the worst part of it.
So this is a great point for me to say thank you for your service.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
And I sincerely mean that. I think, you know, our son is a police officer with OPD, and we truly appreciate first responders of all types. You know, it's amazing to us that people, whether it's turnout gear or body armor and a gun. People who go to work in those conditions, I think, truly are heroes in this world. And I, for one, am very grateful that there's people like you that are willing to do it. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know, we don't do it for the gratitude. You know,
absolutely,
it is a job. No. And then, you know, we are very appreciative of people when they come in and they thank us for what we do and the time that we commit to the community itself.
But the turn of that is that I likewise see the toll that it takes, not just on the individual, but on the families. And the families are sometimes often unsung.
Oh, yeah.
Heroes in this.
Especially in the fire service. You know, you're gone. You know, most fire service, fire departments work at 24-48. That's one of the most common schedules nationwide. You're gone for a third of your life. You're spending a third of your life at that fire station. You look at some departments, they work 48-96s. So they're there for 2 days at a time. Wow. Then they're off for four, but you're still spending a third of your life 2 days at a time.
Yeah.
At that fire department.
And sounds glorious, yeah, doesn't it?
So you've got to have a strong spouse, you know, that's there with you, especially if you've got kids. These guys, they miss a lot. You know, you miss your kids' baseball games. You miss family reunions. You miss parties. That's just kind of part of it. And you just kind of take that in stride.
You take that in stride. Mm-hmm. People that are not part of that world don't understand it and don't see it.
Correct.
The way first responders and families see it. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm attempting to point out, is that it's so much more than what people think. And that's why I, for one, am very grateful that you and all the others are out there doing what you do.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, we're very thankful for those that support us. And, you know, and in the fire service, you become a big family because, you know, I've seen other guys' kids grow up in the 14
absolutely
years I've been in the
right
fire service. And it's like,
they're like your own.
You know, some of the guys there are my best friends. I mean, I got the one guy that, my buddy Grant, we work out together several days a week. Our wives are friends. We both had daughters within 2 months of each other. So it's just kind of, it's unique how things like that work. And you build those relationships with those people around you. Then, like, again, you spend a third of your life with them. And then you spend the other two-thirds with your real family.
So you talked just a while ago. Recently, you had a promotion.
Yes, I did.
And that was exciting. Talk a little bit about that.
So I was promoted to battalion chief of training. So now I'm a 40-hour guy now, so I'm Monday through Friday. But basically, I'm in charge of all of our training and development within the fire department, from fire, rescue, EMS, that whole aspect. And I have a multitude of other responsibilities as well. But the majority of that is focusing on making sure that I develop out our training plan. And we are required to get at least 100 hours of training every year. We shoot for more than that, 100 hours. It's just the bare minimum.
Each person. Officer?
Each person, yeah.
Okay.
We get an incentive from the state for achieving our training on an annual basis. So I work to make sure everybody gets that time, whether it's it's scheduled out over the whole course of the year. But like I said, I schedule out more than 100 hours. It's about a 200 hour schedule. We have to get 100 to get that. But there's other there's another rating system. So most people don't realize this, but your homeowner's insurance is based off your fire department in your area.
It is indeed.
Yes. So you have an IFIOR, go look at your insurance. It has an ISO rating of your fire department. We are a class two, class one being the highest. And it goes all the way up to like 16, I believe. But we are a class two ISO rated fire department, and your training hours actually give you points towards your ISO rating on a 5-year basis if they come in and check the department.
And so the rest of that story is that the higher that rating, the lower my insurance.
Correct. Yeah. So if you got a one, that's a lower insurance rating. And if you got a 16, you're going to pay more on your insurance. So
that's exactly right. So mm-hmm. I'm very appreciative. Yep. And I learned that years ago and pay attention to that.
And the residential side, it's not as drastic. And you get in the commercial and industrial side of it, properties within the community, then it plays a big difference. So you look at places like your Walmart, your Target, your Best Buys, your big commercial structures, they will annex land if it takes that to get into a city or something like that has a smaller, that has a better a ISO
lower
score.
Rating. Yeah.
And then you look at some of your bigger industries as well. They look for that stuff.
Well, congratulations on that recent promotion. But you've talked a couple of times about something, and I got to go down this path. You've talked about family. Mm-hmm. I love talking about family. So you met your wife in college?
We did. Well, yeah, we met in college. Actually, we met on the very first day of our freshman year. We were in writing workshop class, and at that time, there was only, by the time class was about to start, there was only two seats left available. There was one over by the door, and there was one right next to me. Well, my now wife, she was the last one to class, and she had to sit next to me.
Oh.
So that's how we met. So we like to tell that story because it usually was her, not that we had assigned seats, but it was usually her and another girl that was last to class, the last two to class. So either whoever got there first usually sat in the other seat.
Going to be your wife?
Well, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. The other one's on the trustee board, so I don't know. I don't know if she'll listen to this or not, but Dr. Elizabeth Mulsey was the other one that was always she would always beat my wife there. So, maybe that was then again, destiny.
That's exactly right.
But no, we met the first day of school. You know, we went to class together all year that year. I think I helped her get through calculus her spring semester.
Now, that's saying a lot.
Yeah. Well, I took calculus in high school, and then I had to take it again my freshman year here. And she took it her spring semester. And, yeah, I think she got by. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's not an easy subject to get
by
in.
No, it's not. That's what made me – I came in as a pre-engineering major, and then I took Calculus 3, and Calculus 3 changed my mind. So, at that time, we were both dating people our freshman year, but then came back our sophomore year, and we were no longer dating those individuals, and we just kind of – got to talking again, and then we were just on and off all the way through till we graduated. And summer of 2009, she called Best Buy one day, and I answered the phone, and we got back together after that. So, it's kind of an awkward story, but just a different story. And she came into Best Buy, and I was like, "Hey, you doing anything? You want to hang out?" And kind of that's where it started at.
And her name?
Her name is Elena. Maiden name Morris. So she's I'm sure she'll listen to this when we're done. She'll want to hear what I had to say. But
so we need to talk more about her.
Oh, we can. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what does she do?
So she's a teacher over at Owensboro Innovation Academy. She was at OHS for several years, and she decided this year to make a change. So she's over here right across the street
at the Innovation Academy. Mm-hmm. That's well, and my hat's is off to her as well.
Oh, yeah. You know,
teachers are also extremely underappreciated.
Oh, yeah. She definitely deserves all the credit that she gets. She does a fantastic job, and she loves what she does and enjoys most of the kids that she has. So, and I know she puts a lot of time and effort into what she does. So.
Yeah. So, but then the bright, shining star. You have a daughter.
We do. We decided to wait. We've been married since we got married in 2011, and we decided during COVID that we were, ready to maybe have a kid. So we decided to have a child, and her name is Sloan, and she'll be 2 in June. So
the terrible twos.
Well, hopefully not, but we'll see what happens.
It's a coin toss.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's a coin toss.
But no, she's the queen of the house now, I'm pretty sure. But there's no doubt about that. She's fantastic, so
there's absolutely no doubt about that, but there's nothing like them.
Oh yeah. She's great. And that's the one perk about now being, a 40-hour Monday through Friday, guys. I get to come home every night and spend time with the family, and I'm off every weekend. And so there's some perks to my promotion as far as changing my schedule and so on. I get to have more family time, and I'm not away that every third day now.
Yeah, I can imagine that that's going to be even a lot better now, having Sloan in your life. So what do you guys like to do to keep busy? I mean, I know there's work, and I know there's your daughter, but what kinds of things do you like to do to keep busy?
So we, That's weird. I don't know. I mean, we travel as much as we can. We have become big hockey and Nashville Predator fans. So we go to Nashville as often as we can and to watch Predators games. We've been to two already this year, and we're going to two more in March. We took Sloan to her first one this year, and she loved it. but we like to go and do. We're not, you know, people that want to just sit at home and have things. We like to spend our money on experiences. So we go and do. Again, my family still lives in Louisville, so we go up there as often as we can and go out in Louisville and do different things. Parents have a place at Rough River, so we'll go to the lake on the weekends, come once it warms up a little bit. But a lot of that, I mean, this time of year, there's not much you can do except sit at home. So
that's exactly right. Yeah. And bundle up.
Pretty much. The way the weather's been around here, it's exactly right.
So you're from Louisville. You still have family there?
Correct, yep. All my parents both still live there, and my brother lives on the east side of Louisville, and then I have another brother who lives across the river over in Indiana.
And what about your wife's family?
They're all here in Davis County still.
All right here?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So she's from here?
Correct, yep.
Okay. All right. Well, that's excellent. And so you get to them periodically, but you said you like to travel other places.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I absolutely have to ask every single one of my guests, and now it's your turn, is tell me about a favorite vacation, a favorite time you traveled. Now, here's why, Corey, because Brenda, my wife, and I are nearing the age that we'll be thinking about retiring soon. And we like to travel too.
Yeah.
So I'm stealing ideas from my guests.
So we pretty much vacation in Naples every summer. We actually just booked our condo last week. We like Naples. It's a little quieter than going to like the panhandle of Florida. Plus we have friends down there that we like to go visit. So before the baby, we were spending about 2 weeks every summer down there. This year we're going down there for 10 days. But outside of that, my favorite vacations, I like to go on cruises just because you get to go to different places. You know, I've been on, I think, 5 cruises now in my life. And, you know, every day is a different adventure because you get to get off at a new port and go check some things out. But when you're not driving, you're not flying, somebody's driving a boat and you're just having a good time while you're on the boat.
Absolutely. So where? Tell me some of the places that have been to your favorites.
Been to Jamaica, been to Grand Cayman 3 times, been to Cancun, been to Cozumel. I've been to Belize, been to Honduras, been to Bahamas twice. I think that about covers. I think it's everywhere though. Key West. We love Key West. I've been to Key West 3 or 4 times, not just on the cruise and driving.
We've not been to Key West ever.
Key West is an experience. You need about 3 days. And if you go in July, just make sure you take plenty of clothes because if you go outside, every time you come back to the hotel room, you're going to change. Yes. So.
Oh, that's funny. So on your cruises, what would you say has been one of your favorite ports?
I like Grand Cayman. I think Grand Cayman is pretty neat. It's a little bit more, I guess it's the last time I was there, you know, heck, their money is worth more than our money is down there. So everything's more expensive. But it's just a little bit, I don't know, nicer in some of the parts. That one was nice. And I like going to the Bahamas. I think it's a unique little area there.
And we've not been there either.
At Nassau. Nassau is just a unique, a lot of different shops and different little areas just to hang out and have fun. And we go do some of the excursions and things that they offer off the boats, the catamaran out to some different islands and snorkeling and things of that sort. So we went to Key West. We took a jet ski tour all the way around Key West. That was pretty neat. So,
well, that'd be fun.
Yeah. So different things like that. I like getting out on the water. I like the ocean. So.
So normally how long of a cruise do you take?
The last couple have just been 3 days, but if I could, I've done 2 week long ones. I think about a 7 day one's about a good time frame.
And is there any cruise line that you recommend?
I've been on Carnival and I've been on Norwegian, and Carnival is probably a little bit more family friendly, where Norwegian's a little bit more adult friendly. So I guess it just depends on what you're going with. I mean, I like the Norwegian. I really enjoy the ones we did with them. So.
And any other places other than cruising that have stuck out to you that you've really enjoyed?
No, nothing. You know, I went to the Panhandle of Florida for the first time last fall. I went to Destin for a week with all my wife's family. But other than that, we've talked about trying some different things. We actually made our first trip to New York City this couple weeks ago. We went up the week before Christmas. And that was a unique experience. So,
New York City is a fun place.
It is a fun place. We had a blast, and we're gonna go. We didn't take the daughter with us. We're gonna go back in a couple of years and take her. And but it was definitely a unique place. That's for sure. I'd like to go back. I'd like to go back in the summertime and see what it's like. Because it was a week before Christmas, so we wanted to go at Christmas time to see all the trees and the decorations and all that stuff. So we really enjoyed it. But I definitely go back.
So Naples, I'm not familiar with Naples. Is it right on the beach?
Yes. So it's about 2 hours south of Tampa. It's the last exit on Interstate 75 before you turn left to go to Miami. So it's as far down on the Gulf Coast side as you can go. But yeah, it's right there on the beach. So you got there's Fort Myers, Bonita Springs, Naples, and then Marco Island's right off the coast down there as well.
Okay. So definitely something you'd recommend.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's a lot to – I mean, there's different things to do. It depends on what you want to do. I like to just sit on the beach all day and play in the ocean. But it's very nice. It's clean. And, a lot of great restaurants and different places to go. Plus, like I said, you're 2 hours from Tampa. You're 2 hours from Miami. If you want to go make a day trip and go somewhere, we'll drive up to Tampa for the day and go to Rays games in St. Pete. And drive back, if they play like an afternoon game.
So what I'm hearing is that you are saying that when we retire, it might be a place that we spend a month or two or three.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's a big snowbird area. So this time of year is their season. Everybody's come down from the Northeast and down to the warm weather, and they'll all go home here in about 2 months. They'll start heading back. But that is a big that's a big wintertime retirement area.
Well, I'm okay with warm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just down in Tampa this past weekend. It was 80 and sunny for the 48 hours I was there. So
That sounds very appealing to me. Mm-hmm. Very appealing.
It was nice. It was tough to come back here to this, come back to this weather.
Oh, so. I bet it was. I bet it was. Well, Corey, we are nearing the end of our time together. what else do you want our listeners to know?
About me?
About you?
I don't know. I think I pretty much spilled it all out there. I don't really have much else to say other than, we're here talking about KWC. It's like I really enjoyed my time when I was here. And, we try to be involved around the community as much as we can, still in the KWC community, still come to all the football games that I can, and, enjoy serving on the alumni board and trying to help out where I can there. So that's the gist of my life.
Well, absolutely, and I appreciate what you give back to Wesleyan. It takes everybody. There's I've told people before that for me, Kentucky Wesleyan became part of my DNA. Mm. It's part of who I am. You can't really separate us, and I know that that's also true for you.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, about the fire. We all at the fire department, we always, if you're not getting joked on or making jokes about each other, then you don't, that's the running joke, is if nobody's messing with you, they don't like you.
That's right.
But everybody knows I'm out here tailgating at all the football games, and they'll drive by in the trucks and they'll see me out there and they'll honk the horn. So hey, you got to go in the Wesleyan game this weekend? Yeah. Yeah, I am. But I enjoy it. And in these kids that are here now, they deserve the support and of the alumni and the people in the community for what they do, not just football, but all the sports in general, softball, baseball, soccer, anything that we can do in this community of Owensboro to help support the school and support the teams, I think is very important. And
yeah, I completely agree. And thank you for your part in doing that.
Oh, well, you're welcome. And hopefully I don't plan on stopping anytime. So
good. Because you're going to have to fill in behind old guys like us.
Well, that's okay. I got a few more years at least, hopefully.
Oh, geez. Well, Corey, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and I know that our listeners are going to enjoy getting to know you just a little bit more. So thank you for your service on a daily basis. Thank you for your service to Kentucky Wesleyan.
Oh, thank you, Doug. I appreciate the invite, and I appreciated everything.
And until next time, be well.
This has been another episode of Alumni Evolution, the official podcast of the KWC Alumni Association, hosted by Doug Hoyt, class of 1984. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to follow the Alumni Association on social media at KWC Alumni. See you next time, Panthers.